The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. If you're concerned about your health in any way, we encourage you to consult your GP.
People don't like talking about it, but incontinence can affect anyone. You may have a friend or relative who lives with it every day, or maybe you're worried about your own incontinence. Incontinence Talks is here to make us all feel more confident about continence, hosted by former Olympian rower and Coloplast ambassador Pete Reed. This time, Pete is chatting to Coloplast ambassador Samantha Cole about her life as an ISC user.
Sam, it's great to see you again. It's wonderful to have you back. How does using intermittent catheters affect your lifestyle?
Well, thanks for having me back, Pete. I've lived with intermittent catheters for a very long time now, so it's almost like I don't know any different.
How long?
My maths isn't great, but I'm 46 now, and I started using them when I was 18. So is that?
That's a lot.
That's a long time. It's a long time. And I've gone through different catheters during that period. I've had different challenges, different successes. I would say more recently, I've had quite a significant problem with my foot, which means I can't go upstairs to the toilet at home.
Is that related?
Yes.
Okay.
It relates to catheters in my bladder and things like that.
So I don't know this stuff. The listeners probably won't. Do you mind explaining how?
The problem with my foot is called chronic regional pain syndrome, something related to my incomplete spinal cord injury. The reason I mention it is because I don't have a downstairs toilet at home. I can't feel when I need to empty my bladder. It's very difficult for me to get upstairs. So I've been emptying my bladder much less frequently than I should. And sometimes downstairs with a bag attached to the catheter.
Yep.
I've had a lot of UTIs as a result, and I've been draining over a litre each time.
Goodness me.
Not great for bladder health, as I'm sure you'll agree.
Yeah, that's not what the urology nurses would teach you in hospital.
No. They'd probably advise strongly against it.
So typically I've heard sort of 400, 500 mil, 600, yeah, sort of max, and yeah, you're emptying a litre.
So not great. And I suppose I mentioned this because over the years, my needs for ISC have changed, and it kind of varies according to the rest of my health. How they affect my lifestyle, I always have to know where the toilets are, wherever I go. Trains are difficult for me at the moment, but I would absolutely avoid going to the toilet on a train whatsoever.
Why?
Because I've seen train doors open without them needing to be open,
okay,
and someone being exposed. And if you're there sticking a tube inside your urethra, that's a bit embarrassing. I wouldn't want that to happen on a daily basis.
I do medical things and non-medical. So urethra, we both know. But
yeah,
it's your pee pipe.
It's your pee pipe. It's where you place the catheter to drain the urine,
yeah,
out of your bladder. So those are things that I worry about a bit, where the nearest toilet is.
I totally relate to that. So I've built up like a database of the familiar places that I go, of where I can go to the loo. And pretty much my whole day is governed about, okay, what am I drinking? When do I need to go? I can't feel it either. So I'm sort of going on the clock and kind of what I'm drinking. But it's a real concern. And I learned the hard way more recently than you, I think, because my injury was in 2019 when I was 38. But did you learn this the hard way when you started to self-catheterize? Is there a horror story somewhere about when you just went, oh, this has gone wrong, I can't get to a loo, and what happened pre and post-op as well?
I've suffered with urinary incontinence since the age of 11, so not able to control urine flowing out of my bladder with no voluntary control. And that's until the age of 30 when I started having Botox injections. So it's not completely cured me, and sometimes I still do wet myself. And I would say the fuller my bladder is, the more at risk I am of having an accident. So if I am somewhere, no toilets nearby that I've clocked, that's a concern.
There was a pre-operation part of your life.
Yes.
Yes. Where you were incontinent, and so there's more of a free flow, where the concern was wearing something to a pad, or and then post-op, you effectively, the door was closed. So I'm butchering this, but can you explain?
Yeah, it wasn't quite like that.
Okay.
Bladders are very complicated, as I'm sure everyone knows, and so are spinal cord injuries. and they all affect people differently, and you can get various types of neurogenic bladder. So disturbance your bladder due to a disrupted nervous system. And for me, age 11, my first symptom was I wet myself and we didn't know why. And then I lost the use of my legs. Then I had an operation and I was still wetting myself, but I couldn't voluntarily go to the toilet. And so I was on medication, which made my mouth very dry. And until I was 18, I was still incontinent all the time.
So that's so that period of your life from 11 to 18, it's like the taps left on a little bit.
Yeah. And it was still left on after I had the small urethral procedure. They injected a bulking agent around my water pipe. Then I was fully in retention. As that wore off, I was incontinent again until I had Botox at 30. So it's a bit of a long sort of convoluted history of my bladder, but so I've experienced both retention and incontinence.
So stop me if I'm getting this wrong, but it's important to say how complex the neurological process of peeing is, because there's a urethra, which is your pee pipe. We've discussed that already. That leads up. So from where the pee exits your body, different on men and women, but everyone knows where that is. At the end of the urethra, there's a part of your anatomy called a bladder sphincter, which is the door that leads into the bladder. And the bladder is like a balloon that is, when you're fully emptied, it's a balloon that's like a crushed balloon, just floppy and nothing in it. And then during the course of the day, over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, it fills up with pee. And that comes down from a different pipe from your kidneys after it's been filtered, to the point where the balloon is so full, it's sending the signals to your brain to, I need to go to the loo. And those processes are neurologically complex because one of the muscles needs to contract to close the door and stop pee coming out, and another set of muscles need to be relaxed so that the bladder can expand. And then a signal needs to be sent and you need to hear it. If you've had a spinal cord injury or a few other complications with your urology, then these messages don't get sent. So the sensation of being full, the ability to release to open the trapdoor, the ability to squeeze, to pee, to void the bladder, to empty the bladder, which can lead to so many complications. And the bladder as well is a very delicate organ in a fine balance because you've got a waste product with very delicate membranes in that area. So my understanding of your operation, we got there in the end, is that what they were doing is artificially closing the door around your urethra.
Yeah.
But that's not as effective as a healthy person's sphincter. So there was, although in some parts you needed to open the door artificially with a catheter, and because it wasn't as strong, sometimes you would void, so a little bit of pee would come out. Is that about right for that chapter of your life?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I suppose the only thing I would add is that some types of neurogenic bladder are overactive. So your bladder's just doing that all the time
What's that? Because we're a podcast.
Sorry, I'm squeezing the air. Sort of
spasms around a balloon.
Spasms. So your bladder's just sort of fibrillating a little bit.
Yeah.
And that can cause incontinence. So some people have a flaccid bladder. Some people have a spastic bladder. And it can depend on what level your injury is at.
Flaccid, like a floppy balloon.
Like a floppy balloon. You can't tell it to contract at all. And a spastic one where it's contracting. Or the sphincter is contracting and you can't go past that. So there can be a real combination of these things. And it's difficult to manage. And it's all an individual thing.
That's what makes this complex as well, because it's all individual. The injury, the reasons why, what happens afterwards. I think we're in agreement. It affects every part of your life. If you're planning on where you're next going to have a pee and do that safely, and not only when you're out and about or on trains or traveling, whether that's in the UK or otherwise, but also at home. If your home's not quite set up, it affects every part of life. And for me, lots of people see the wheelchair. And they know I'm disabled, and we'll get onto that in a second, the difference between me and you there, because you walk, you've got a spinal cord injury, people make assumptions. But for me, typically, if anybody mentions it. They friends might say, how's rehab going? Are you walking yet? Or is there any more strength in your legs? People in the public say, how are you getting on? Must be hard being in a wheelchair. It's so common to be judged and just look like my legs don't work. But legs not working probably doesn't make the top five of the things I'd like to have back after spinal cord injury. And tippy top of that list is bladder function. You've got the same tippy top of the A-list problem that I've got, but nobody knows. So how does that affect how you behave with colleagues at work, for example?
Yeah, so I was working as a GP trainee, so a GP registrar, and that takes a lot of training to get to that point even. I knew I wanted to be a doctor from the age of 11 when I had my own operation, and I was very determined to get there despite all my struggles. And I mentioned in the previous podcast, my self-esteem was massively damaged by incontinence. I wanted to be a surgeon, and I had to rule that out quite early on, because you can't be taking your scrubs off, taking all your sterile gear off to go self-catheterize, come back, start again. You know, your patient's waiting under anesthetic, and you... I realized that's not going to happen. And also I could not possibly stand for the length of period. I know there are doctors who are wheelchair users. In fact, I'm not sure if you know.
Dr. Mo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who operates from a wheelchair, urologist. So, you know, fantastic. But at that point, it wasn't an option for me. And so I had to start tailing my potential career prospects, guided by what my body was doing and what it would allow me to do. I have always been quite closed in the fact that I self-catheterize. I never thought anyone would be really interested, and I was quite embarrassed about the incontinence. So I just tried to avoid it at all costs. And I'm not working at present. I've had to retire on health grounds due to several other things that have been going on. I do have a lot of health-related issues due to my spinal cord injury, but also what I call regular person problems that I've acquired along the way. And unfortunately, it led to me not being able to work.
How's your self-esteem now?
It's improving. And I think Coloplast has had a lot to do with that, to be honest with you, because I have a stoma as well, and I've done a lot of work with the stoma side, given quite a few talks, done a few podcasts, been around people who have similar issues to me, and realized we're all just getting on with our lives. We happen to share an unfortunate experience, that actually these products make it possible for us to live our lives as best as possible. Yeah, I think having to retire at the age of 46 is difficult. And I think we discussed this previously, your whole identity is made up of your career sometimes, especially in certain professions. But I would probably say I've never been a very confident person, but I'm probably the most confident I've ever been.
Wow. I can really, really relate to everything you're saying. I'm glad, so selfishly now, I'm glad that someone else gets it and understands. And I know that if I'm listening to you with some relief, thinking, oh, thank goodness Samantha gets it and understands, then there'll be lots of listeners that do as well and also feel empowered. We'll talk about products in a second, but just sharing, it feels like your journey into medicine was similar to my journey through Royal Navy. I haven't mentioned it yet, but I was a former naval officer and an elite athlete in that program. So I spent a lot of time rowing, and I went to the Olympic Games. And over 12 years, I won 3 Olympic gold medals in different crews. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because public perception of me was a 6'6", triangular-shaped, very fit and able-bodied person. And it's a very long way to fall from there. If we're talking about societal expectations, you go from being one of the fittest people in the world, doing something extraordinary, being in the spotlight and being praised and going to parties and being very normal. And this stuff wasn't on my radar either. There's no shame to that, because that's the world we were living in. There is a little bit of shame because I lived and worked with Paralympic champions as well. So it was on my doorstep in the room, and I didn't ask these questions either, but I had a very successful time in sport. I was perceived a certain way, and then I was injured once I went through my return to the Royal Navy. And it's a long way to fall. I think the reason why I mention it and big myself up is because it's important for listeners to know that no one's immune from this stuff. I'm not saying it to fearmonger. I'm just saying why it's important to engage, to think. And there may well be people, even if you're not injured and don't have any continence problems, there may be people in your life, in your family, in your friendship group, at work, that are working through, working with, having to work around the issues that you and I are discussing today. It's actually very, very likely. I went through the rehab process and not just learning to use a wheelchair and trying to get as much muscular strength back in my lower body as possible, but also learning about urology and trying to pick up as much as I could from the people that knew so much about urology, to the extent where I went back to the Navy to reestablish my career from a wheelchair. And then over a period of time, slowly realizing that I'm not capable of doing this. So in your case, it shaped the direction of your career. Okay, you know it's not going to be surgery, and then you became GP and a registrar, and then there's a loss when you realize this is unsustainable for me, this particular job. And I've never talked about this, but I think a lot of people think that I left the Navy because of the wheelchair. I couldn't walk and couldn't get around. It wasn't that at all. It was because of reoccurring UTIs. It's because I couldn't keep up the workload with neural fatigue, having a lower battery, and having 1 week off every 3 weeks, with feeling as not only physically bad, but emotionally as well. It affects the way you think. And then going on to antibiotics and being back in the system before getting another UTI. It was so urology, bladder related that cost me that part of my career. And that's sad, that's loss. And I asked you about self-esteem, but I'll offer mine. I felt really low then, coming out of something that I loved with people that I loved. And then you leave for a bit and just think, okay, what's the direction now? And when I had a UTI, it's the only time in my life that I felt in any way despondent, because you don't feel like yourself. You're not thinking clearly, you can't speak clearly. It was a really tough time. When did you leave your profession as a registrar, GP?
So officially last August.
Okay.
But I'd been on sick leave for 2 years by that point.
Okay. And is there a, in the NHS, like a medical discharge process? How does that,
yeah,
how does that work?
You have to take, it depends on the scenario, but I took ill health retirement and I was awarded. I do that with quotation marks in the air, tier two, which means the top tier of ill health retirement benefits. So it means I can't work again. And that's a real big pill to swallow, a real difficult pill to swallow. I was also dismissed on grounds of ill health as part of that process. And a lot of people say to me, but you're a doctor, how can you be dismissed because you're unwell? And I thought that at first as well. I thought, how dare they sack me? You know, it's not my fault. But I appreciate they can't keep you on their books forever if you can't actually go to work and do the job. So it's very difficult. I mean,
this is not long ago either.
No,
so not, August last year, I'll date the podcast, but really not long ago. It's fresh.
It's fresh. It's very fresh. And I'm still sort of coming to terms with it, I think. I've had so many health issues I've had to deal with in the meantime that all my time is taken up with what I call medical admin. And I don't know if you experience that as well, trying to get appointments, trying to chase this, that, and the other, waiting lists for various procedures. It sometimes just takes over, and I find it very, very difficult and frustrating.
Is it double frustrating because you're a doctor, so you know the processes, you know the people, and you can sort of get an idea for if you're being judged as well? Does that make a difference? Because I can relate to what you just said, but I'm not an insider in the NHS. I just, and actually I've had generally good experiences. I think it's generally good experience because I don't know any different.
Well, I do know different. Yeah. And my experiences have been really quite poor. Despite the fact I know the system, I know how to get my needs met. I know what to ask for. I know what language to use. I still end up not being put on a waiting list that they've told me. So like a year, been waiting for an operation, not being put on the waiting list when I phone them. Like, where am I? Things like that have happened several times. And
this is important as well. We've both shared a story about leaving work. That process is challenging. It's emotional as well. It's part of your identity and purpose. That's not true for everybody. So if there are people out there who do have issues with their continence, what we're saying, it doesn't mean you have to leave work. For employers, it doesn't mean that if someone's got continence issues that they can't do it, and far from it as well. I had to repurpose and just have a bit of a rethink. And I think part of that is it's healthy acceptance and it's expectation management, but there's purpose and fulfillment and work in a different way. You just need to just have a big rethink after a reshaping of life, I guess, of what work looks like now. How do you make it work for you? So two things. One, it might not be the end of the career just because you're going through a process involving continence, and it is manageable in no small part because of new products that are available, new innovations that are available to people now to make these aspects a lot easier. And two, if you do have to transition, it's amazing what you still can do with some healthy acceptance and some reshuffling of your own expectations, which even though at this early stage for you, because it's only recently that you left the NHS, you've said that you found purpose in the role that you're doing publicly now to spread awareness of continence issues, of self-catheterization. How are you feeling being a brand ambassador for Coloplast as well? Do you feel in a self and healthy place for work and purpose and fulfillment and looking to the future positively?
Yeah, I just want to go back to your point about people listening not to be terrified about, oh, if you've got continence issues, you're going to have to leave work. The reason I left wasn't related to my continence or my bladder. So I just wanted to highlight that. At the moment, I've got a few ideas up my sleeve, things that I can do. I love being a brand ambassador for Coloplast. Like I said before, I've met so many people. I've had so many opportunities to share my story, to speak to people, to educate. And it's been a real privilege, the whole thing. And everything they've asked me to do, I jump up at the chance. At the moment, I'm actually co-producing a musical at Nottingham Playhouse. And I've always been interested in like the creative side of things. But getting into medical school, I had to kind of put that to the side. And it's about disability.
What's it called?
At the moment, our working title is Secret Sides of Us.
Okay.
And we've got a few characters who are wheelchair users. One is an ambulatory wheelchair user. We've got a character with a stoma who has a big song all about stomas. And it's co-produced by people with disabilities. So I'm one of those people. And we share our stories and we create the characters, and then we're going to have the musical. And it's been a great experience. So, Pete, what about you? I mean, you have such a high public profile, and suddenly the whole world will have known about all your private business.
Yeah, they know what I'm prepared to whatever I'm prepared to share, and I think it's important that I do share this stuff. So, in my previous life, what I've always called Chapter One, headlines might have been about winning a third Olympic gold medal, and now it's Pete Reed, Olympic champion, has continence issues and bladder and bowels and this and that, and then it leads down the path of pipes and plumbing, and I'm happy with that. Like, I'm prepared for that. I've made an emotional transition. I'm not harking back to my old life wishing I was there. I think the discussion that we're having can really help a lot of people, and I know I do have a public profile. I think it's important, and I do have a sense of duty to say the stuff that not everybody's comfortable to say, because it can make them feel seen and relieved and empower them to have those discussions as well when they're ready. and I do feel able, so I should be talking about it. And that's what we're doing today. Like, this is us walking the walk. Can I talk about the impact of incontinence and continence on friends?
Not many of my friends know that I self-catheterize.
Like close friends?
Yeah.
Okay.
Perhaps they suspect. They do know I have continence issues. They know I spend a lot of time on the toilet. Some of them may know I have a stoma, but I've never been someone who just advertises the fact. And I don't suppose many people advertise the fact that, oh, I'm going to go and urinate now and I'm going to be 5 minutes and this is why. I don't know, but I think it's because I started doing it at a younger age and my continence issues were from a really young age. I've had a lot of punctuations in my past. And when I say that, I mean periods of time that were punctuated by wetting myself on important occasions.
Do you mind talking about those?
I don't. Two of my best friends got married at separate times in South Africa. I flew over especially for those weddings. One of them, I didn't even get to the reception because my whole dress was covered in urine.
Oh, no.
Another wedding, very similar. And I don't know if it was because I was too busy having fun. I didn't think, oh, I need to go and catheterize, because like you, I don't have the sensation that I need to go. And I just got distracted. But that's so sad to me. I missed my friend's reception. And my first day of high school, in front of all my new friends, my school dress was soaking wet.
It's heartbreaking.
Mm. It's been very difficult. And each time that happens, I just want to sink into the floor. And I did emotionally sink. And I didn't want to sort of acknowledge it. I was like, oh, sorry, do you mind helping me? Or, sorry, I've got a problem with my bladder. I just got up and I left. And I never said anything to anyone.
Am I only saying that it's heartbreaking, by the way, because of society?
Mm.
Maybe I am. Like, that's heartbreaking because I know what being first day of school, what that feels like anyway. And I know what it's like seeing a big wet patch, whether that's someone else or me in childhood. But maybe it's a societal thing where that shouldn't be heartbreaking, where it's a, oh, no, I've got this. Well, I haven't got this one on this occasion, but this is normal for me and I need to just go and clean myself up.
Yeah. And a teacher didn't really stick up for me either. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
that
yeah.
Would, back that then, would have been quite nice.
Are we talking 90s here? Are we talking, yeah. So that's really tough. And if I say traumatizing, is that a fair reflection?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think my whole personality would be completely different. And I suppose it should be completely different if I hadn't gone through a lot of those things, the incontinence from a young age. I think I would be, I don't know what would happen. You know, I managed to get to be a doctor. So maybe I would have gone even further if I had more confidence.
You said you love being a brand ambassador for Coloplast. But why? Why? Has the platform given you something?
It's given me a lot of things. It's, I would say, made me a much more confident person. It's given me the opportunities to share my story. For example, I've been to Copenhagen. I've spoken in front of a really large audience, 800 people, and then thousands across the world live streamed. I would never have done that before. And it's sharing my stories of being incontinent, essentially. And as I've said, I don't really talk about it to friends and family, but I now am building that confidence. I've spoken at the House of Lords. I've done all manner of things, haven't I? And sharing my story, talking and connecting with people who suffer similar health conditions as me, it's making me realize this is my life. Being an ambassador makes this a positive thing in my life. I can share my story and I can help other people. Being a doctor helps other people. I can no longer be a doctor, but I can still help. And it's just opened doors for me in terms of communications, creativity, seeing what's out there and jumping at the chance at anything that's offered.
On our next episode, Pete talks about his own incontinence experience and the impact of UTIs. There are lots of amazing charities that can provide focused support depending on your particular needs, as well as lots of information at collarplus.co.uk. Thank you for listening to Incontinence Talks, and remember to consult your GP if you have any worries about your own continence.